Welcome, Aural Traveler, to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 273. This is a very interesting episode, and there's a lot of huge backstory on it that I'm excited to tell you about. But first, I will say that I am been doing stand-up comedy at Zany's in Nashville on December 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and also at Zany's in Chicago, 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. Gotta build up the new hour of material. My comedy special, Mandroid, airs on Comedy Central on November 10th. So watch that and then come out and see me. Is that a lot to ask? I apologize if it is, but I'm still going to ask. And also, Amazon.com is a sponsor for this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. If you go to this podcast page, click on the Amazon banner, and then you just shop as you normally would, you will support the Nerdist Podcast. Thank you for doing so. If you do, if you don't, I'm not going to judge you. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was an almost tragedy turned smiley face, and here's what happened. We had an incredible live podcast at the Best Buy Theater during New York Comic Con. There were probably like 1,100 people there or something. It was incredible. Joel Hodgson was there, Guillermo del Toro, Travis Beecham, who wrote Pacific Rim, which Guillermo is directing, and Matt and Jonah. So many wonderful things happened during the podcast, very special things. And we finish the show and we're all just sort of high-fiving each other. Yay, us, oh, we're so good at this. Hey, let's pat each other on the back some more. And then Matt goes to grab the computer where he has been recording the show. And we start listening to it. And then Matt goes, wait, why the fuck did it stop recording after 8 minutes? And I look, show's gone. No show, gone. None, not recorded. The computer stopped recording after 8 minutes for some reason. So in feeling rage inside, but trying not to seem outwardly rageful, I went to the promoter and I was like, the show didn't record and we lost it. You know the whole podcast thing? Not a podcast now. So we asked the guys backstage, who I guess were the audio guys or the stagehands. I'm not exactly sure whose job was what. But it was the worst, most infuriating attitude you could have had about it. The one guy was like, yeah, it stopped after 8 minutes, but I didn't know who to tell. I was like, someone? Someone? Get all those people back in here. Get Guillermo back here. We have to do this again. You know, I mean, it was really such a not my problem kind of a thing. And I get that, you know, not everyone, it really doesn't have to be everyone's problem. Although I guess it should have been, because I think that might have been his job. But it was just like, come on, dude, you know, tell one person, anybody, that something has happened. And then, and don't just fucking, you know, like, throw up your shoulders and go, well, I don't give a shit, you know. It was an expensive show to put on, and it's not like they were working for free, so I had a tough time with that response. I mean, I didn't, at that point, it's like, I couldn't even get mad. I just was like, well, there's no, okay, well, you didn't tell anyone. I mean, what, there's literally just no point in getting mad. But I am glad that I did not have fireball hands like my dark elf wizard character from Skyrim, because I probably would have lit that motherfucker up and then felt bad about it afterwards. Then I would have resurrected him and made him a dead thrall, and then he would have had to follow me everywhere and fight battles for me. That would have been the way to go. So I was heartbroken. It was just one of those episodes that I really wanted to, was excited, super, super excited to share. And then I got an idea, because we all have technology in our pockets. So I tweeted out the next day, if anyone bootlegged this show, by all means, let me know, and we will use it because we really need it. And lo and behold, at Jim DeFalco, J-I-M-D-E-F-A-L-C-O, like 5 minutes later, goes, I recorded it. And so he sent me the file. It was recorded off of his iPhone. And listen, I'll be honest, the sound quality isn't amazing, but it is listenable. Like, it's, you can hear it. It is good enough to put out. So I would like to thank Jim DeFalco for bootlegging the show, and give him a high five on the tweets if you want to. This was recorded off his phone. He got the entire fucking show, and I am so thankful that he did. I don't know why he bootlegged a show that was supposed to be a podcast, but I don't give a shit why. The fact is, he did it, and I owe him a lot. Otherwise, this would have been lost forever. So thank you to social media, and thank you to Jim DeFalco, and thank you to bootlegging. God damn it, I'm maybe one of the first artists to say thank you to bootlegging. So that's it. That was my long tale. I apologize, but I felt like you deserve some context in the full story and some appreciation for the guy who helped make this podcast possible. And also thanks to Travis and Guillermo and Joel and Matt and Joan and everyone else who came to the show. All right, here we go. It is the Nerdist Podcast number 273 with Guillermo del Toro, Travis Beecham, and Joel Hodgson live from New York Comic Con.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'll sit in the middle of this press conference.
What is happening? Make up your mind. Yeah.
Oh, bring that chair back. Welcome, Jonah Ray, Matt Myra. What was so funny backstage before?
So Sam, we were talking to Sam back there, is one of the promoters, and he's saying, what do you guys do, like a nerd comedy? Like Abbott and Costello, and then Jonah went, go ahead.
We do a nerd Abbott and Costello. Who's up first? Third base station. And to recreate the moment, thanks, guys.
It was hilarious. Yeah.
It was good. It's really, you had to be, like, there. Yeah. Right there. You had to be right there.
You had to be there.
Yeah, just right there. Yeah.
Jonah's very excited, because what's across the street, Jonah?
Oh, Guy Fieri's American Kitchen.
Shit, yeah, bro. Living life on nitro gear.
Exactly. Right when you sit down, you get your complimentary tequila bourbon shot.
Tequila shooters, bro.
Hey, that's right.
Ooh. And the ranch dressing is what he uses to frost his chips.
Oh, yeah. Smash Mouth plays all the time. Check it out with some hot wings.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Diners, Drivers, and Dives. I'm stealing that.
That's the show. Every show.
A bucket full of steaks with a diamond fork.
Every show is that. And then he goes, "You gotta put pork on that."
That's his thing.
Every time.
That's his catchphrase. You gotta put pork on that.
Might as well be.
Marcus Welby.
Marcus Welby.
American Kid. I bet they have just a whole menu that's just fried. You want the fried menu? Yeah.
It's fried. We painted fire on it. Okay, Fieri.
Hey.
Is anybody?
You want? You guys? It's about 10 minutes before you can get a table. So you want to frost your tips while you're waiting?
just sit over there.
Having a good time.
Can you put on this shirt that has flames on it?
Yeah. I'd like to see if you could just walk up and break off a piece of his hair and just chew on it. Like,
yeah. And then you get the shittiest powers ever. Just shitty powers. Can you fly? No, I could just sleep. That's a power? Yeah, it's Guy Fieri power.
Yeah. I'm also good at skanking, man.
Guys, Badfish is coming.
Yeah.
Sublime cover band. Which is weird, because technically the band Sublime is now a cover band. It's like rock and roll karaoke. The Guy Fieri 3, Sublime.
Is Guy Fieri performing in that band?
It looks like it.
He should, right?
Yeah. They just look like triplets. Guy Fieri triplets. They're fat, blonde hair, and playing horrible music.
Hanging out with my friends.
Yeah. Every band we don't like is Smash Mouth.
I,
That's true, right?
I was on the lower
side. That's totally Smash Mouth.
I was on the Lower East Side, and I saw the most delightfully Jewish name I've ever seen of a business. I wrote it down. Yonah Schnimmel's Knish Bakery.
I thought it was going to be bagel, 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 bagel.
But, well, that's a much more racist term.
Is it? I think it is. That racist? I have voice now. What is that racist?
Guys, it's a religion, not a race.
As he drinks it up.
Well, I switched to Heineken because that's what James Bond drinks.
Heineken!
Yeah, they decided that.
Shake and not stir. No, beer doesn't work that way.
Thanks, corporations.
Mr. Bond, beer doesn't work that way. Beer
doesn't. So,
I just rewatched Die Another Day yesterday, or 2 days ago. I don't know if you guys have watched it yesterday.
Some
it's
people
worse
don't like it.
Than
Some
you
people
remember. And the Die Another Day theme song. Do you remember the Die Another Day theme song by Madonna?
Die another day, cause today's a poor day for that.
At one point in the song, she goes, Sigmund Freud.
What?
Yeah.
That's how you up the intelligence of any song.
And then she goes, analyze this.
Yeah.
Analyze this.
Dude, but
and I'm like, what's your favorite De Niro movie?
You just shot, Sigmund Freud. Shot.
I like
it's a really smart song. You guys just don't.
Yeah, that's the thing in Madonna, like in Madonna's mind. She's like, to smarten up this song, I've just added the names of intelligent people.
Yeah.
James Bond, Nikola Tesla, Nikola. Do you have it right there? Nikola.
Let me skip in you. It's worse than you remember.
I don't remember it. How about
it's worse than that.
What movie is this? Is this with the guy from Mrs. Doubtfire? Is that the Bond?
Robin Williams?
Is this the one?
Did you say Matthew Lawrence?
No, it's Robin Williams. What the fuck are you thinking of?
You said the guy from Mrs. Doubtfire. Matthew Lawrence was in Mrs. Doubtfire.
What?
No, Harvey Fierstein.
Oh.
Oh, Q.
Listen.
I better call Q. I better call my lawyer. And get the lawyer.
Q, get me the watch that shoots lasers.
We really gotta do this thing. Her Majesty's Secret Service.
You know what? I don't feel like it. I think I'll just die another
day. I tell you what.
I'll talk about octopussy.
I'd let him Blofeld me. Fuck you.
I can think of a couple odd jobs.
Why can't it be Octo Balls?
Sigmund Freud. Bam!
Skrillex's favorite psychoanalyst.
Smart guy.
Sigmund Freud.
He's smart.
You know, we should have our first guest out right now.
I love that.
You want to do that?
Should we hum him out with music?
Music should be hummed too.
I don't know, maybe a certain kind of theme song.
Do 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 do. In the not too distant future. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joel Hodgson.
But his bosses didn't like it, so they shot him in the face.
Welcome to the show, Joel Hodgson.
He's not done, Chris.
Sorry.
Continue, Joel.
A little more cord. Thank you.
A little more cord.
Thank you. More cord, please.
Cord. Most people don't know that Johnny Carson reference.
Carson Daly?
You mean that thing?
Man, my dream happens to be on Carson to get waved over from the video segment.
That is such an example.
He's going to wave you over from whatever couch thing he's sitting at that week because they don't have a studio.
I was kind of hoping you didn't have the jumpsuit.
Oh, really? You want the jumpsuit? I got it right over there.
Do you have it?
Yeah, you want me to put on the jumpsuit?
Yeah.
Let's do a sexy version of the thing.
Sandwiches and movies. The worst he can fucking find. Rock them all with
the mic.
We should talk while I do it.
Keeping my joker control. Well, those movies again are in second place.
How was this? And was that? Mad Dog and Glory.
This is what you brought.
Oh, these are my 8x10s. I'm gonna sign
very
this.
Very current.
For you.
Wait,
what? These are my high school yearbook photos.
Still from the movie Phantasm. They won't even get a ball ahead of me. Are you the tall man?
Yes, I'm the tall man. I thought I'd be like working on a cruise ship as a magician. I'm floating a ball in this picture.
How did you do that?
I get 8x10s.
Did you just throw it and then they took the picture?
No, it's a, I can't tell you.
Chris, is this the part of the show where you get our comedy heroes to get naked in front of us?
That's right. Wait a minute, you guys digging this shit?
Oh, shit.
Oh, his shirt says Austin Rocks on the back.
Keep it weird, Joel.
You want some of this?
Yeah. Yes!
She's turning you on, you weirdo! Oh, her. Okay.
You never know if he'll fall asleep on stage. Give it up for Joel!
Yeah, they can see ours. I can see the black stuff. You can't see. No, because of your stuff.
Joel likes a box of brief. Yeah. Just let everyone know. Also enjoys a high sock.
Is that a Tom Servo in your pocket? Take your pictures!
I never realized that the jumpsuit was so short.
Yeah, was that always the case? Was it always that short?
They're really jump shorts.
Jump chants?
They're really kind of jump shorts.
You should go to cosplaying contests and win.
You look just like him.
He doesn't look that much like Mike.
I don't think mine's as loud as yours.
Could you make Joel's louder?
Yeah.
Alright, Ted.
I can't talk as fast as you either.
What are you talking about? Why that wasn't speaking fast? I can't get on. I'm talking words now.
Talk fast.
No, when I listen to the podcast, you really talk fast.
I do.
You talk really fast, especially the intro part.
Yeah, well, I like to... My idol is John Machida, the fastest talking man.
Oh, sucker
to
micro machines.
Micro machines!
When you try to talk fast, you talk weird and slow.
I'm not talking about that. Talk fast? Okay, here we go! Yeah.
It's like the Bionic Man. This is me talking really fast.
I am talking faster than your ears can crush. And now you can suck.
By the way, there's a new... We saw a song on iTunes. It's a top song on iTunes.
We saw a song.
We didn't click listen.
Yeah. We were also on acid, so that explains how we were able to see the song. Purchase.
We looked at all these smells.
Feel it, Chris.
So
Look out, Christmas shoes. There's a new heavy-handed sheriff in town, and it's called Beer for Jesus. It's beer with Jesus. There's a song
Beer with Jesus.
Beer with Jesus.
I'm listening.
And before Chloe even clicked on it, I go, I want to tell you exactly what this song is about. It's a redneck lamenting about how he just wishes he could have a beer with Jesus Christ and ask him questions about life.
Oh my God.
And so she starts playing the song, and it's just like, and so I wanted to ask, how do you turn the other cheek? That's it, this beer with Jesus.
I'm belligerent.
Who is singing for the
Jesus? With Jesus.
I
should have a big place, it ain't too crowded.
He's hitting on our Lord.
So we went down to St. Peter's
I just love the idea that he's like a swimmer's body.
He's giving it a lot of thought, like he might fuck Jesus later.
Gonna find a bar that's not too crowded.
Yeah.
And I'll drop the roofie in when he goes to the bathroom.
Jesus don't like a crowded bar, you know? He likes a bar, though. He likes to sit on one side of a table.
Drinking with Jesus and you were, like, really distracted by the TV.
It's right beyond him, too.
No, it's, you're thinking of doing the Sermon on the Mount? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you seen this?
Jesus' glass just has the blood smear on it.
I don't get it.
Yeah, let's get crucifucked up tonight.
Post time, late night, Jesus, I'm gonna drink this. It's your blood. It's just wine, you guys. It's not really.
Shit, hold on, give me your phone. I'm gonna text Mary Magdalene.
And Jesus is like, should I text Mary Magdalene? I wanna text her.
Jesus Christ! What? You want hot wings?
That is a really bad song.
Define bad.
Smash Mouth.
Okay.
I'm excited you're here, Joel. I want to bring out our next guest as well, so we have the full panel rocking. We have actually two guests.
The full panel rocking the night away with you guys at the after party at Guy Fieri's American Kitchen.
Full panel rock.
Tequila shooters on Guy.
Yeah.
Check out the Nerdist sliders.
Jesus Christ, drinks free.
This is very exciting to have this guy.
Yeah, no, you can stay there. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want. You can be wherever you want.
Our next guest.
Guys, we went through this during run through.
Save it for the stage, man. Come on.
Do it on the night.
Yeah, do it on the night later.
On the real show.
Well, we're not doing the practice show like on SNL where they do the pre-show.
Yeah,
they do the real show.
It's called the dress rehearsal.
I don't care. This is really exciting, you guys. There are two gentlemen backstage who are working on a project together that is very relevant to your interests. So please welcome to the stage Travis Beecham and Guillermo del Toro!
Kind of weird out here, you guys.
This is gonna be like our second best podcast ever.
Yeah,
after Tom Hanks.
Right. That was a pretty great one. Welcome, you guys. It's nice to see you.
It's good to be here. They were just saying backstage that you don't like really calmly. I don't think they really cue, so it might be a good idea if you go. And then we heard the cheering. And they're like, go.
So Travis wrote a movie called Pacific Rim,
yeah.
Which Guillermo del Toro is directing. And I kind of want to give people a little bit of context over there. I just moderated the Legendary Comics panel, and
how'd you get that gig?
I almost said the same thing.
How'd you get that gig?
I own you!
That's the laughter bunny causes.
But you guys are doing you're doing a Pac Rim comic that is essentially. Do you want to talk about it a little bit, Travis? Just tell people what the comic is about.
Yeah, sure. It's gonna be basically a prequel to the movie. So it's the movie. It kind of drops you in. I love the drop in. I'm a big fan of Blade Runner. You know, where it's like you don't get the explanation. You're kind of dropped into the situation, and you just follow the world as it goes. And so what that does is it leaves a lot of room open to fill in the gaps, you know, and go back and tell the backstory. And that's essentially what we're doing in the comic book, is taking it from the history so you see how our world became this world that you see in the movie.
Yeah. Because when you were working on the character Bible, it was just like 1,000 pages.
You know we did? Is this one?
No. I don't know. It should be.
Hola.
Wait, try the wireless right here.
What the fuck? No, I'll take this one. So, no, when we worked on the... We developed the signage on the robots. We needed to develop the tech on the robots. We needed to sign everything. Where they would be open for repair, fueling stations, where they would be boarded from, all of that. And at the same time, we were developing the biographies of the characters. And there was a huge backlog of information. We generated a Bible that was about 1,000 pages long. We said... And in the movie, when you see, there's a lot of signage on the tech areas where it says hazardous stomping danger. You know, it has a Jaeger foot crunching a person. Really small.
You could have just had it run on pink slime like the Statue of Liberty in Ghostbusters. Doesn't need to be refueled. Just good vibes, everybody.
We did think about that. But there's a lot of stuff that was generated that we'll find somewhere that is way into the comic.
Yeah. So we showed, Guillermo showed the Pac Rim trailer, which no one had seen except for San Diego Comic Con. And I think what happens a lot of times is New York Comic Con is such an amazing convention, but it doesn't always get the love that San Diego gets just because it's very convenient for Los Angeles to just send people to San Diego. And so New York doesn't always get these like big, huge... news-breaking kinds of things. And so Guillermo, they told him, they're like, I don't think we're going to show the trailer. And he was like, I'm going to fucking show it anyway. And he showed it, and people fucking leapt to their feet and went bananas. Like, it was such an amazing moment.
It was beautiful.
In that room.
For a fat man on my... I was deeply moved and shaken.
I hear you.
Not only fucking ding-dongs. Winkies.
So I know you can't. There isn't really much we can talk about with the movie, but you know, how's it going? Are you happy with the progress? Like, what?
Well, it's the best experience I've had in shooting a movie in all of them, including Spanish language, European movies, or American movies. This has been the one where I actually enjoyed the process from beginning until now, loving it.
Yeah,
it's literally the most fun I've had. And, you know, we were fully supported. Legendary and Warner's have been great. And with Legendary, with Thomas, obviously, you get to geek out. And you get to talk to a studio head that has Sideshow Toy Maquettes on his shelves, that he has a Jim Lee or Frank Miller original on the wall. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's expensive. Are you guys looking forward to the porn parody Pacific Rim Job?
Ooh, that needs a Pacific Rim shot.
How hard was to come up with that? It's
not like... hard at all. But those robots are going to be real hard when they're fucking.
It's not like saving Ryan's Privates. Homo Alone or any of those.
Sweet Homo Alone versus Creamer.
For the listener at home, Chris spent about 5 minutes talking about how we're all going to have 45-minute orgasms before the show started, and then he said, strap on your cum boots. And I just assumed that was for protection from all the cum that would be on the floor.
Those would be cum galoshes. Or cum galooshes.
Yep. I loved watching backstage. I'm going to turn it away from
you. You always do.
Is your microphone working yet?
Fucking shit. Yeah.
You fit in great.
I saw Guillermo do a Q&A with Edgar Wright for Scott Pilgrim at the Egyptian. And fantastic
fucking movie.
Great, great movie. And the only thing I took away from it, other than the fact that it was a fantastic movie, was Guillermo loves swearing.
Oh yeah. And honestly, when I moderated the Packer panel at San Diego Comic Con, you burst into a tirade because you're like, "What did you remember? What you said about motion capture?"
No. That happens with Tourette's. You don't remember.
You said you were talking about how the robots in Pac Rim. You're like, there was no motion capture. Fuck motion capture. Like, you got so mad at motion capture. You're like, fuck mocap.
No, what it is it's difficult to do that with. If the robots need to move like humans, then it's. I mean, they can move human like, but I wanted the you know shock absorbers and everything mechanical to be animated. Frame by frame.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go the easy route and have them move like they are, you know, 200-pound actors. They needed to move like they are 25 stories high. They cushion a little differently. You know?
Yeah.
Like they would not walk normally. So
it looks amazing. Like it looks so amazing. Like when you see. There's a lot of discussion about whether or not to go with a hat, but. I feel like
wrong choice.
Aren't gonna get this.
Oh shit, sweater vest. What's up?
But yeah, it looks amazing. The lack of motion capture really comes across because you really get the sense of the scale of these things. And
same with the monsters. You know, the monsters are humanoid, but they are the proportions are not like me. They are proportionless.
You said something. I had the absolute pleasure of going to the Masters of Horror dinner. It was John Landis and like a million amazing.
Well, Joe Dante, John Carpenter,
Robert Rodriguez,
Cronenberg, Robert, yeah.
And I don't know how you guys got on that topic, but you started talking about how farting in public, and you're like, I don't fart, but I don't.
I don't ever. But that's the tragedy of being my size. You're in an elevator, somebody farts, they look at me. No, not fat fucking.
That's why you should just do it, because it's going to land you anyway.
I can't. Really, I'm the most polite.
His theory is sound.
Yeah, because you said, I don't fart in public, I just look like I do. That's what you said.
Exactly, it's a tragedy. I'm an innocent man.
I only fart
for a crime that I didn't commit.
A man fart framed for a fart crime he didn't commit.
But those are fun dinners. We always have dinner somewhere in Burbank, and they are the strangest ones. And some of the Masters of Horror are really cheap. So every time we
well, they're horror movie directors.
And they are always saying, "How much do I have to tip?"
John Carpenter, come on!
So we go with the rest of our dogs. No, you have to. Seriously, man.
But this is big trouble in that little Chinese restaurant.
Nice.
Wow. But you are, I think one of the reasons why people love you so much, besides the fact that your movies are stunning, is that you are. It's like you're one of them. You're one of us, and so it's sort of like if anyone in this community got to make a movie, it's like you're the guy because you really are. Like I get like Guillermo and Joel geeked out on each other the second it was like I'm a big fan of yours. They're like, but I know right back at you. Like, and you guys geeked out about each other's work for a while.
That was the craziest makeout session I've ever seen in my life.
I still don't know which one of them farted.
Only natural. No, you know, I think that when you come in, it's like I was walking the floor yesterday in the Comic Con, and you see some vendors and some stands where you know that people really get it.
Yeah.
And then you see the ones that think, oh, the kids are going to like this.
Right.
And you can see this weird, they don't really belong with the product that seems calculated. And as a geek, you have a bullshit meter that is really, really extremely real, extremely accurate. And the truth and loving the things you do are it's weird and it's hard, but at the end of the day, it's really satisfactory because when you meet people that love what you do, you know they really love it.
Yeah.
They're not there because they have to be sympathetic with you. They really are there to connect with you.
Yeah.
And I love it. My social life, other than this, is fucking zero.
You're zero?
Literally. And then I come to these things and I love, really meeting like-minded geeks.
Yeah. Adam Savage tells a story about how he met you at San Diego Comic Con one year, where you were like walking by or talking about, and he was like, "Oh fuck, Guillermo del Toro!" And you yelled back, "Oh fuck, Mythbusters!"
That was the second craziest makeout session I've ever seen.
You were present for a lot of these makeout sessions.
Hey, I had him actually, the Mythbusters guy, absolutely.
But you inspired Adam Savage to have a man cave, like his own.
He came to visit Bleak House, which is the house I bought to gain independence from having anyone tell me what the fuck went on the walls or not. You know, I've been under the dominion of my mother for so many years, and then I marry, and my wife says, "You can't put that in the kitchen." I said, "I buy my house." I'm 43, I'm buying my house. And I bought this house, and I built the secret passages. I built a room.
The audience collectively just went, "Oh."
It is fucking amazing. You would pay to see this.
It's really good. And I have a room where it rains all day. Or outside it's raining 24/7. With a surround system with thunder.
If anyone tried to burgle it, I feel like they would open the door and see Samael like snarling at
Right now they open the door and there's a life-size sculpture by Thomas Kubler of H.P. Lovecraft reading a book looking straight at the person coming.
If they open the door, you should get some locks.
You turn the corner and at the end of the corner is Hans the Midget from Freaks with a razor blade.
No way!
That's my fucking alarm system.
Dude, that's just like, that's like Brian Brown's apartment in FX, where he's got the creature and
I have a 10-foot-tall, hyper-real Frankenstein head by Mike Hill, staring right at you when you come in.
Oh, shit.
I mean, a burglar going in either has to have a strong stomach or really be hungry to steal that shit.
I'm here to steal the rain.
You can't steal the rain, brother. It belongs to us all, right?
No, I'm taking it.
You can't steal the sky.
I'm stealing the ceiling.
What?
That's a mushroom conversation.
But I discovered today in the panel that you're also a huge fan of Sid Marnycroft. Like, I started naming off all these Mexican sea monsters. And
when we were exposed to everything from Buff and Stuff to Lidsville when I was
there. Yeah, with Hoodoo. How was, because you grew up in Guadalajara, is that right?
Yeah.
So what culturally influenced you? Like, what of our stuff did, first of all, you're bilingual in a way that, like, I can't imagine directing in another language. Like, would you always speak English, or how did it?
I started learning English in Mexico we subtitled the movies. So I would watch the Universal Monster movies every Sunday and read the subtitles and listen, and then I started buying Famous Monsters of Film and Mad Magazine, and I literally got a dictionary from my father's library, and I started translating like that, and I'm self-taught, and so it took many years, and I never lost the accent, but I really love writing in English when we write the screen novels. Writing screenplays is super hard, but literature, writing fiction is fantastic, and it's the monsters that did it. It was either Alfred E. Newman or Casey Gold was covered by Ronnie Andrews.
Okay, I'm going to give you $50 and you say all that, and then at the end say, "Thanks, Rosetta Stone."
Hey, where would I be without Rosetta?
Snip, snip, money!
I want to learn Japanese, though.
Oh, yeah.
I can say, "Chotto mate." Or that.
I just know...
And I can sing the Totoro song. Aruko, Aruko, Watashi wa Ginki, Aruko wa Nitsuki, Don Don Iko.
What does this say?
It's the song in the opening. What the fuck? I don't know what they say.
They don't have melodies in Japanese.
I do, but I can't say. If I sang, it would be with a mariachi, and I need a couple of tequila.
Bring those, can you bring those over there? The mariachi, not the tequila.
We'll just head over to Guy Fieri's place.
Frosted Tips Night.
I heard that in the panel, you loudly exclaimed something that is one of my favorite things I've heard at Comic Con so far. Was a guy was talking about Sid and Marty Krofft, and he mentioned Slee Stacks, and you go, "I fucking love Slee Stacks."
Yeah. You know, the suits were great because the eyes had so much depth.
Yeah.
Those acrylic eyes.
Yeah.
They haunted me all my life. I don't wear it, but I have this nastiest Slee Stack belt buckle.
Oh my god!
With the big eyes.
Where did you get that?
And can I do a commercial? It's a little store in Bourbon called Hyena. It's a gallery.
Oh yeah,
they have a great. They had it in bronze and silver. I wisely chose bronze.
Oh my god, that's awesome!
Yeah,
I actually met Sid and Marty Krofft, and I asked him about the Slee Stack costume, and he said he had one, but it smells really bad.
those creatures would smell really bad.
No, it's from the guy who wore the costume.
They hired some homeless guy to play the Slee Stack.
No, in fact, this is true. When we do a creature suits in the movies, at the end of the day, the performer loses, and it sounds great in the EPK. He lost 5 pounds of sweat every day. Yeah, but when you need to rinse the area where the ball sack went, they rinse it with vodka.
Oh, really?
Seriously, vodka or high-octane alcohol. And I don't want that job.
You know, you can hire people to do that. You're a high-octane
alcohol. Yeah, but then we go to lunch on Sunday and they tell me, you motherfucker.
That's traditionally the screenwriter's job, by the way.
But truly, a sweat performer is sweat. Doesn't get fresh.
So with a movie like Hellboy, is, you know, so many scenes, or especially Hellboy 2, where it's like they, you know, sort of up the creature quotient. How much time does that add when you basically are directing like a Muppet movie kind of?
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Let me tell you, like, we have Abe Sapien who can't see. He has 2 pinholes, and then you have Johan with a gigantic Mysterio head with full of smoke and zerbos, and he can't see except for and Johan throws a bag at Abe in one scene where I will tell you about it later. Take 20. Go buy it. And it's like that. It's like when you're working with normal situations, you go from here to here, you sit down. But when you're working with a creature, it's like you grab them by the shoulder, you have to map it out like you would be if they couldn't see.
Yeah.
And they need to count the steps. They need to know where the chair is without making it look like they don't know. It multiplies the time of the shoot enormously.
What was it that sort of, what was it, things like Sid and Marty Krofft? Like, what inspired you to, because so many of your films have that, there's one special element like that that I think, you know, has become sort of synonymous with your...
I think the movie that changed my life in that respect was Planet of the Apes. And beneath the Planet of the Apes, the moment when the guys remove the masks and the skin is raw underneath, I dream about it still. I love it. And Planet of the Apes, I could watch endlessly in a loop for the rest of my life. I love Roddy McDowall. You know, and
that Planet of the Apes. Sorry, I thought you meant the Marky Mark one. Because I was like on board until then.
It's really, John Chambers, I think, remains one of the really top makeup artists that ever lived. And he's not recognized as much as he should be.
Yeah.
I think Argo will be interesting to see because of that.
How do you, because you're such a fan of stuff, because you're such a fan of comics, I know, and video games, and film, how do you find time, like, because you have to create so much, so when do you get to be a consumer? When do you get to, like, take things in? Do you still have to make time for that?
Yeah, no, thankfully my daughters love the stuff. So we play video games together, we watch some weird old movies together. Right now they love black and white anything on the house. They adore it, and we watch, like, we religiously watch Adventure Time. Which I think is truly a masterpiece. I say it without any hint of just geekdom. Is the freedom, the way they associate things, the innocence of, and at the same time, the sort of gleeful perversity. It's just amazing. I mean, I have my Finn figures at the office.
Oh, wow.
And, but we do that, and then...
I just want to throw a concept at you. I've actually an Adventure Time movie. All right, anyway, play with whatever you want there.
But I also, I love... The thing that I don't do as much as I used to is I have my painting model station. I love to paint models. I don't have time for that much more, but I have my... One Phantom of the Paradise pending.
Phantom of the Paradise!
That's the only movie. I own a 35 millimeter print.
Oh, no, gee, really?
Yeah, and
that's
awesome. And I have two of the Phantom masks replicas. I have the action figures that came out of Medicom.
Do you have Brian De Palma's crane as well?
No. but I've had a dinner with Paul Williams a couple of times.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just to geek out and say. Swan.
He's like, I don't care as long as you pay for the meal.
I love that movie with all my heart.
It's a great movie.
It's an incredibly romantic movie.
Is there any part of you that sort of, where you're like, someday I'm gonna be a big director just so I can meet all the people that I've
yeah. it's literally I love working and meeting the people I admire, and contrary to what I mean, I've been disappointed very few times. Most of the time I meet somebody and, we hit it off, really, and we become friends.
Who is the most disappointing, Sean?
But, you know, it happens. But amazing, like, John Landis is a great friend. Mm-hmm. You know, I really adore him. Joe Dante, Carpenter, Cronenberg is truly, truly a great guy.
Yeah.
He's constantly giving me some life advice. Like when Pans was going to Cannes, I stopped in Toronto and he said, you know, be prepared, fantasy is never going to win that festival, so don't get your highs up. And hopes high. It was wise. Wise for him to say it. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Kronos was a great movie, by the way, and I was kind of looking at, like, I mean, obviously, in other movies, I'm sure you all know Guillermo, but, you know, Mimic or Blade 2, but there was a movie that I hadn't seen that I saw on your IMDb page that I wanted to ask you about, because I loved the description of it so much.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to give you a piece of news nobody knows, and they'll probably kill me for it, but Criterion is doing Devil's Backbone.
Oh, really?
Oh, which is my favorite movie I've ever done.
That's your favorite movie.
That's my
That's
favorite.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, because the one that I saw was called Geometria.
Oh, yeah.
And 1987, 9 minutes long. Here's the description. A boy is tired of failing geometry, so he summons a demon.
Been there, done that.
It's true. It's in the Kronos Blu-ray DVD.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I included it. It's a movie I did for $2,000. And I did all the makeup effects. I did some of the lighting. I built the sets. My mother is the main character. And is the mother of the kid.
Wait, is she played the demon?
No. Yeah. The demon is played by a friend. The brother of a friend is a boy with a wig. And all the voices in the short is me. Because it was shot in fake Italian. I'm fake Italian with subtitles, so I make the voice of my mother, the kid, the demon.
Geometria now in Fotalian. When you find, you know, because so I mean, like your earlier work, your hands, you're in it, like you're doing most of the stuff, and you're crafting it. You're sort of like you're creating kind of a moving sculpture, I think. Mm-hmm. So when you can make a movie like Pac Rim, and you're given, you know, a massive budget. Do you feel oddly like that's limiting in a way? Because I sometimes think the less money you have, the less resources, it kind of can force you to be more creative. So is it unnerving a little bit when you have all of the resources in the world?
Well, first of all, your duty as director, no matter what you're doing, if you're doing a $2,000 movie or a $100 million movie, you need to make sure that your ambitions are far, far bigger than the budget.
Yeah.
You need to try and make it look twice as big. So no matter what the budget, I'm always counting the number of cars, of extras, counting the days, trying to do double shifts, whatever it needs to be. So no, and in the case of Pac Rim, knock on wood, so far so fantastic because we got away with some really, really crazy shit. Really seriously crazy shit. So, I think it's been the best experience also because I really can't say this enough. Thomas Toll and John Jashny are real, real fans.
Yeah.
So I could go to Thomas and it's the first time I would be arguing with a studio head saying, no, keep that. Don't lose it. Find something else. It was really great to do that. And we have a couple of really deranged set pieces in that.
I mean, I know. You listen. I mean, I don't know if people will believe me because now Legendary owns our company. But I don't believe you.
Honestly, Thomas will literally say, like, you know, you gotta make your own vision, and you have like he's such a. You sit with him, and you run out of the room, and you're just like, I'm gonna punch the moon because he's like, think as big as you could possibly think, and then go bigger and do whatever you want to do, and we just want to support that. It's fucking crazy.
Why would you punch the moon?
Why would you beat up the moon, man?
Conversations I had with Thomas, you know, you're used to some pretty pedestrian conversations going in and having meetings with execs and that sort of thing. And Thomas, like, I remember it was a development meeting about Pacific Rim. He said, now, I've been thinking about how this thing works. Is it anything like quantum entanglement? And I'm like, well, yeah. You wouldn't put that in the script because... No, I mean, like, he comes at it from, like, a really earnest place, and, you know, it's just been a very, very charming
place. And look, from the beginning, I had two perfect experiences shooting. Devil's Backbone was one because Pedro Almodóvar produced it, and he was truly like a guardian angel. He was sure that we got what we needed. He was not interfering. He was a director. He is a director, so he knew how to produce for a director, and it was an amazing experience. And the other one is Pacific Rim, because basically, if I needed Thomas or I needed help, I would call and they would be there. Other than that, they wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And I was super happy to run the set with the same freedom I would run an independent movie. I would say, we're not doing those pages, we're doing this other, we're not doing this in the other room, let's change the dialogue, like, complete freedom. It was fantastic.
So how, you know, with any movie, but Pac-Rim in particular, you must have to, like, going in, your vision must be so crystal clear because you just, there is no room for, like, I don't know.
That's why you should never, ever make a movie you don't really want to do. I don't understand how anyone can do a movie by a decision of career, because I think shooting is a movie. A movie is like fucking. At some point, you cannot fake a boner. You're into it.
Good night, everybody.
When you leave tonight, remember that, guys.
Like Leslie Nielsen said, I fake everyone on my own.
Yeah. If you fake a boner, it's a phoner.
you can fake an orgasm. You can be like, done. Here comes the finish. You cannot fake a boner.
I don't know it can.
It's impossible.
You must have done that.
Wow! Hey,
I'm
coming!
Oh, lady!
Put on your cum galoshes!
What happens is when
no
you're...
No shimmels, can I fake
it? I'm finished here,
though. You get asked like 500 questions a day, and a lot of them... You can be quick about the decisions you make, but instinctively, and this happens, the more experience you get, the smoother it gets, the decisions are very accurate and well-considered, even if you have to take them fast, like color. Everybody comes at you, and your job is to have all the answers and have all the right answers all the time. Like, literally, when you're directing, everybody's coming from right, left, all the time. Second language.
Get your fucking heads out of the gutter.
Yeah, when I direct, everyone's coming.
Oh my god, Big G.
I got a question for you.
Director of Pacific Rim Job.
I got a question. You did Cronus before Hellboy, right?
Yeah.
And when did it dawn on you that Ron Perlman, you said, shit, he looks just like Hellboy?
No prosthetics.
It was really...
It was the Beauty and the Beast series, wasn't it?
They took his wig off.
When,
When Ron and I first were, we were post-producing Crohn's, and we went to a party, the opening party for Reservoir Dogs. Quentin was there, and he had just shown the movie for the first time, and we were trying to get in, and we didn't have an invite. So I said to Ron, you should get in, because you're famous. He says, I'm doing a fucking TV show. And he was, Beauty and the Beast had just finished, and we walk in, I go behind him, the bouncer says, I know you, you can go in. And then he says, but what are you? He says, I'm an actor. He says, no, but what series? He says, I'm on TV. He's walking up the stairs, and the guy says, I know who you are. You're that motherfucking lion dude.
Very respectful.
We should do a show called That Motherfucking Lion Dude. I'd watch it.
It's exactly like the new Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but that's the European title.
Ron, the moment I approached Larry Gordon they said you can do the movie because I love the comic with a passion. The moment it was accepted, I said I want Ron Perlman to be the Hellboy, and that's why it took 8 years. It took 8 years to make Hellboy because every single meeting on every single studio was no to Ron Perlman, and the weekend Blade 2 opened, and we opened number one. I called Ron and I said, either we get this thing greenlit next week or we're never going to do it. And literally, the week Blade 2 opened and it opened big, we got Hellboy Green.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, I just feel like with so many other mediums, you can make stuff and turn it around a little bit quicker. I mean, television takes a little bit of time, but, you know, like you said, 8 years or, you know... How long have you been working on Pac Rim?
Yeah. About 2.5.
Yeah, so, you know, you're investing a massive chunk of your life in a movie. Do you feel any risk at all, or is it just like, head down, do your job, you know? Like,
he's got a room where it rains all the time.
You cannot be rational and make movies. You cannot be socially apt and make movies.
You have to love it so much that you don't want to spend your time doing anything else. Yes,
absolutely. Like, it's a perfect look. If you're gonna bet, you should bet for the extraordinary in your life. You know, like, there's a lot of guys that can be better, more sociable husbands or fathers. I may be crappy at some of it, but fortunately for me, my family is a circus family. Yeah. They travel with me, they love it. They know I arrive at 2 a.m. and go to work at 4 a.m.
They lift big weights. One of them's a lizard girl.
I'm very happy about that.
I was just wondering, like, I feel bad for a director, like, if they work so long in a movie and it doesn't turn out quite the way they wanted.
Yeah, that was my biography recently.
It happened what?
Yeah, well, the Mountains... Mountains of Madness, we've been trying for 13 years now.
Oh, God.
13 years, and we came very close right before Pac Rim. And it collapsed when we were... I was scouting in a helicopter the glaciers when we got the phone call to come back to L.A. and have a meeting. We were opening the offices the week after.
Well, I hate when bad news comes in a helicopter.
In the helicopter. In the glaciers. And I said to my wife, I'm going to pack my thick pants. And I go with sweatpants. My legs went completely numb in the middle of the excursion scouting. I regretted bringing my... And now to this day, my daughters and my wife say, pack your thick pants.
But does that stuff... I mean, are you... Can you kind of roll with that stuff, or is
no,
it?
I was really, really, truly affected by the fallout of Mountains, but that happened on a Friday, and Monday I was on board of Pac Rim. I was already producing and developing along with Legendary and Travis, but it really affected me. It's the first time in my life when I truly, for 2 days, I was completely depressed. Deeply, deeply, deeply depressed. And then I said, I gotta go and shoot. I love this movie. And for the longest time, as we were designing Pac Rim, and I was just producing, I was thinking, who is the bastard that is gonna take all these great designs and enjoy them? And, you know, when it happened, I was quick and happy. But for that weekend, it was a weekend in hell.
Well, people, or in the rain room.
In the rain room. It was sad in the rain room.
Yeah. It's always sad
in
the rain room.
With the rain, you couldn't see my tears.
The rain is tears, bro.
It's like he's just sitting. He's just sitting in a room, and he's like, something's wrong. And he just flips the switch. It starts raining out the window.
Looking out the window. Got some dogs in here.
And he looks over and he goes, shut up, Lovecraft.
Quiet, hands. Stop mugging me.
Well, I think just watching people in San Diego and watching people at New York Comic Con today, they are
weird.
They are excited about, I think they're excited about Pac Rim, because I think it's a movie that they really want, like that, you know, no one's really done like a great, giant, like kaiju movie in a way that we feel like technology should have given us by now.
What about Robot Jocks?
Touché. It's always either monsters or robots, it's never quite...
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously... You know, there was maybe one sequence in the first Transformers. Like, okay, that sequence is pretty cool. But then it's like, no, that's not what I needed.
What sequence did you see that was pretty cool?
It's the sequence where there's the chasing down the freeway with
Oh yeah, that's a...
and he does the whoa, like running.
I like when the Transformer pees oil.
So the old ones have beards.
It doesn't make any sense, Travis. Don't think about it.
Because they didn't have a mechanic come along and make a goatee.
Like, when does my car get old enough that it has a beard?
Wait, so you're saying that there are no robot beards in Pac-Man? Because in a specific
Starscream
a bunch of beards.
Only the kaiju have beards.
Oh, Megatron, wouldn't it be wild to grade against some robot pussies? Megatron, what are we going to do?
Yo, oh, jazz. This is how I talk for some reason.
I am Smirnoff, what the country robot?
Hey, let's go to the moon. Let's get Buzz Aldrin in this to fuck over Matt Myra.
Everyone's out to get you, huh?
No, just Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz.
Do your kids appreciate? Wait, they were having this great conversation, Joel and Guillermo, William of the Bull, I believe.
Yeah.
We're having this great conversation about how Joel said you thought your kids would really dig Mystery Science Theater. You're like, hey, look what your dad did, this cool thing, and they were like, not having it.
Yeah, they didn't. No.
Hey, no offense, your kids are fucking idiots then.
Not sure we're gonna take that.
It's kind of weird if, like, Joel, if you were talking over your then they would have been like, Dad, you're already doing this once.
Yeah, I haven't gotten through a single Mystery Science Theater with my kids.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Fucking idiot kids.
Yeah. Joel, I have a pamphlet for you about adoption.
What? Joel's theory is that kids just naturally aren't into what their parents do, and Guillermo's theory is that they don't understand the concept of B-movies in the way that we had when we were growing up.
No, they got the Transformers.
Well, they got B-movies.
Oh, sorry, you didn't say D-movies. I hate Transformers.
Really going out on a limb there by hearing Transformers, huh?
I mean, I don't have to see them socially. Guillermo might.
I have no social life.
He's always fucking zero.
Wait, the ghost died from
that
dinner.
That's your social life.
It's a pretty good social life.
I think it's not too late to put a 25-story Tom Servo in Pacific Rim.
just in the background
somewhere.
You just hear it suddenly. I'm huge.
Like, you would just see it for a split second. Like, you'd have to freeze frame to see it.
I like Crow.
Crow's the guy.
That's
Crow.
A yes.
Really Crow.
I'm going to take that as a yes. He said he liked Crow, so... Yeah.
Which was your favorite of the robots to design, Joel?
Oh, well, you know, the Crow came right out. He was just as he is, pretty
easy
much.
Easy birth.
Easy birth. and Tom Servo was actually the first show we did. Tom Servo was actually at a different head, and it was a baby robot called Beeper. And Josh Weinstein, who did both Gypsy and Beeper, it just wasn't happening. It was really clear, and I just took Beeper home to my shop, popped off the head, put on the gumball machine, put a pillow on Servo.
You killed Beeper.
Next thing you know,
Beeper and baby.
Please, Father, don't kill me.
I had Jello today.
I'm imagining,
suffocate him with a pillow.
I'm imagining you killing Beeper in my head is like Tim Robbins getting killed by Tom Cruise in War of the Worlds. Real quiet, like.
So it's pretty much you standing in a gumball machine, like, what am I going to do for the next robot?
No, I just had one of those gumball machines sitting on the shelf. I looked at it, and I go, yeah, that'll work. And it was like the jaw was great because it had a spring in it already, and I just attached a string to it, and it worked like a perfectly jaw. Yeah. And that was it. And, you know, because we did 20 shows locally, and so that's kind of where we figured it out. And then later, we got the money to do it, got paid to do it, and that's when I painted them and got them nice.
Did anyone ever pitch a joke that his head was always full of gumballs, and every time he opened his mouth, they just fell out?
It's in the opening.
Oh.
Look at the opening.
I guess maybe that's where
it's
I got
hot,
it. Everything about having a theme song, we were like, not too distant, like we were explaining the plot.
Why don't you guys talk over movies?
Why do you guys make comments at these crappy movies? Like, you can really make them funnier.
Yeah, we got a phone call like early on, and a woman thought she was losing her mind. Back then, it just what the only thing that came across the screen was like the severe storm warnings, you know, crawled across the bottom of the screen. And so people, when they see silhouettes and people talking, this woman really thought she was losing. Is this happening at the station?
Was that David at the dentist? Did he call in? Is this real life, Joel? 15 years before I'm born?
Charlie bit someone's finger.
You're also a Valve fan, too, right? What's your favorite Valve game?
Well, man.
I think it's a vowel.
You're a big fan of vowels, huh?
You.
Consonants.
I might lie, because like, it's only sometimes.
Sometimes lie. Yeah.
No, I love Left 4 Dead and Portal. That's why when we were creating the voice for the AI of the main robot in Pacific Rim, I called Valve and I said, is it okay if I use Gladys?
Oh!
And we called Ellen McLean and we've done two sessions.
Oh, shit! That's awesome. What if they just said, fuck no! And they hung up. And then, like, would you just go get a sound alike?
I wanted it to be specifically her. Yeah. I think the what is great about Portal, aside from the gameplay, is how much character they have, you know? And it's great interaction. And it's a family experience. We all play Portal. And my daughter loves it when I lose.
And when you say we all play Portal, you mean your family watches you play Portal?
You believe it or not, but like when we play a scary game, my two daughters say, you play it, we'll coach you. So I'm like, no, now shoot it, I'm shooting it.
I think the most amazing thing about Portal is that it's like you said, that these characters who have no real moving, articulating mouths or features, just very simple designs, are so expressive.
Super expressive. And the design work in Portal is amazing. And the stuff in Left 4 Dead, some of the... I hate normally cinematic little interludes, you know, like... But those are great. And the design of the characters is fantastic. You know, the jockey or the, you know, the tank, which is like Hanover Fist by Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah.
You know? I love those things. And you get to know the characters eventually. Like I'm always Francis on the first one. I'm always like, I'm Francis. I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. Inside of me, I'm Francis. And then the second one, I'm Coach.
Are you going to start doing video games at any point?
Yeah, and we've been developing, we developed something with THQ, and then THQ went through the whole turmoil management change and all that. So
somebody just booed DHQ's turmoil.
Booed turmoil.
It's the worst.
We hate turmoil. Yeah. No, but they went through a complete change, and now we're looking for another developer to do it. We took all the assets that we did, and we're looking at it.
Valve?
I would love that. I mean, look, I love that we have a great kinship, but I don't want to impose my visit.
Chris, okay. You can't just say words.
Valve?
True.
Valve!
Two syllables.
Valve. Valve. I'm like a character in an old 80s cartoon called Valve, but I just say my name. That's my only thing.
Valve.
Valve. Valve is Vulva. Well, I'm podcasting.
I'm best cool. Friends with. What did you say?
It sucks because you're fucking. That was exactly what I was doing. I'm gonna podcast Gabe Newell in a few days, and I
would like to casually throw it out there, like.
Hey, he knows big fan work, he's probably doing it. Why am I Paul Tompkins all of a sudden? anyway, I don't know. I just might throw it out there. Because I would imagine he's probably a huge fan of your work as well. If it's something you're into.
I wouldn't presume.
So what else, can you talk about anything, like what stage of the movie you're at right now, or like, because this is coming out until 2013.
We are deep in pre-production and post-production. I finished my cut, and the movie is right now 2 hours five, mm-hmm. You know, and it's about refining that until we come out. We have every three times a week, we have an hour long conversation with ILM, going through every piece of animation, and every 2 weeks I go to San Francisco, spend the day there with them, going through the animation, and we're managing every shot, acting, pantomime, weight, physics, dynamics, camera moves, blah, blah, everything. And fortunately for me, in the last couple of years, I've been really involved in animation, and it's helped me a lot. Beyond just a couple of shots, to be able to manage the animation language and the crafting of it a lot more.
What is it that you think? Why do you think this kind of movie hasn't been done right yet?
I think that seriously, it's gonna sound like what you said that we, but it needs to have the creative part. I think a lot of people would want to do. But the part where the studios make the decision, you need somebody like Thomas and John and Legendary to go and say, do it. And normally, you're fighting for the movie to be more conventional, for the movie to be there. And who has done a movie like that? There's a thing in Hollywood, they call it the comps. And they say, this movie looks like that movie that was done 5 years ago and that movie that was done 10 years ago, and they made $50 million. So we can give you 40. Mm-hmm. That's the way they make a decision normally. It doesn't come from the gut. It doesn't come from the passion and the madness. And I don't think this movie would exist without Legendary.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, I mean, again, I know people are going to be like, you're just doing a commercial for Legendary. But it really does. Like that. I don't know what else to say.
I don't give a fuck. It's real.
But the footage looks great, and I really hope that, you know, I don't know when people are going to be able to see it, but I think when they do see it, they'll be like, oh, fuck, okay, you know, I mean, you really have to...
You have to find that the craft is that you need to have an artistic or storytelling component, and you have a financial component. And you definitely need somebody in the financial side to say yes to your idea. And that's a tragedy. That's why normally you get more freedom doing things like Devil's Backbone or Pan's Labyrinth, where you go, and this is where he shoots the girl repeatedly. Okay. This is the ending. Here's your happy ending, motherfucker. and normally that doesn't come that way unless you're financing independently. But it's the same with The Strain. The Strain was pitched as a three-season idea to Fox. I met with the head of Fox at the time, and he said, yeah, we want something with vampires, but can you make it a comedy? and I got the fuck out of there. And then I said, I'll write it and co-write it. We did the three novels, and now we're back at FX. And the person in charge of FX, John Langreff, completely got it. Completely got it, and the meeting was fantastic. And immediately, you need that part of the equation to be involved.
Carl Tecuse is on that, right?
Yeah,
that's cool.
He's cool, very cool.
Yeah,
I geek out a little bit.
You spend a lot of time hunting for the right producer. It cracks me up like whenever like fans are like, oh, the screenwriting is so bad, because 9 times out of 10 they haven't read the script. Like they're watching the movie, which is the end result of a lot of bad decisions from the higher, you know, non-creative type levels who are like, oh, well, you know, this love story doesn't make sense, so let's downscale.
Let's give them a pet dog.
Let's more funny, more, you know.
And then they spend an extra $1 million trying to find the right dog.
It should be orange.
No, I don't like. No,
chihuahuas are big right now. Get it? What I just said.
I tell you one thing. There are some studios. Some of the practices that happen is they will to use some imaginary numbers, but they will spend 10 on the movie and 20 on the reshoots.
Yes.
You know, and you go, why? And when it becomes a comedy, when it needs to accommodate the way 60 people see it, is really hard. It's not conducive to making movies that reflect who you are.
Yeah.
No, but it's unfortunately the one thing you learn after the time is to say the most fabulous word in the English fucking language, which is no. No, and fuck no is even better.
I think it might be no in other languages too.
Yeah. You know, the other day I was really enjoying just the fact that we were watching The Cut, and there was a sequence that was playing a little too long, but I think it's right. And I said, no, we're not changing it. And just Thomas immediately said, it's your cut. You do what you want. So it's happy moments right now.
How do you stay passionate about a project when you are working on it for 3 years and not kind of start to geek out about some other idea halfway through and go, oh, I really want, like, how do you keep focused?
Well, production is sacred. Pre-production, you can actually do little things here and there, but post-production too, but in production is 24/7, you're completely dedicated, you know? The movie is real until it really gets the green light. These movies are weird. They are like a lizard. They don't move, and then they feel like that. You go, holy shit, it's over. But it can stay without any movement on the studio for 10 years, and then all of a sudden you're in the premiere.
Yeah.
So it's weird. You have to always be able to almost have something that you can work at another level, like producing something, or being involved in writing, you know. You can do it in pre and post, but you cannot do it absolutely on production.
Well, I think what I'm sort of realizing is that, the thing that you guys all have in common is just the idea that, you know, you too, is you had a very specific idea about what you wanted to do, and you were able to make it, and no one interfered. And then that's why it was successful. So there is sort of a, you know, like, what do you think it's going to take for most studios to kind of go, all right, we'll step back a little bit and sort of let the creative, it just doesn't work that way.
Nothing. Yeah, I think that's what makes good things good, is that good and great by its very nature has to be uncommon. It's the other end of the curve. And, you know, if all studios started doing things in a way that was conducive to greatness, then it would become ordinariness, and super greatness would be the new great. You know?
Ooh, so, super greatness.
Yeah, that's
one step below ultra super greatness.
Super ultra greatness. Yeah. And so it's like...
That's the band that got me off One Direction was super great.
That's what makes it special.
Don't glare at me, Jonah Ray.
Hardwick dropping a One Direction ref.
Hey, I got the internet. I don't know what their ridiculous British teen pop sounds like, but I know that...
You know it's British teen pop. That's enough.
More than I know, I didn't know they were from fucking England. Yeah, well, because I have a YouTube channel, and then when I'm kind of surfing around, like, what other channels are doing well? And you're like, 100 million views for a bunch of British kids jumping around a park. What the fuck?
You know, just let's shoot it.
Me and you and Jonah.
Hello.
fun direction. We want to open up.
You've grown fun direction, but not the existence of one direction.
I think we have time for five comments. If you guys have a couple of question comments that you want to ask. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I had no idea. Oh,
don't walk towards the monitor!
They're mad. What about wrong direction?
Yeah!
I actually think this bit is done direction.
Listen, it's not as crazy.
Done. One, done. It's done direction. Shut the fuck up.
I'm looking at the panel and all I can think of is scanners. Like, I just want someone's hand to fold open. So it's a question, it's a comment, it's a comment.
Really, there's an enthusiasm.
We've done this song 200 times at least.
You walked right by her. She's gonna fucking punch
you. Okay, sir. I'm sorry. Does anyone over here have any question of this? To express anything at all, just raise your hand and shout it out if I could just see any.
Just let it happen.
Haven't you ever learned the casual mouth touch? It's the quickest way to creep someone out. Just like in the middle of a conversation, be like, yeah, so we're going over to the restaurant later. And then
just put your hand in their mouth. Hey, lady, there's a microphone over there if you don't want to stand next to me.
What?
So lucky I'm leaving.
I hope it's barely.
Me too.
Baby train, no!
Please, let's make a website that's just like bears fucking in the wild and call it Barely Legal. That would be so goddamn funny. Because people
like underage bears, right? Underage bears? Those sexy bears, right?
You know, Simba's four, but in bear years, that's legal shop, bear pussy.
At the gift shop, we sell those right to bear arms.
Yes. Yes!
I'll see the buffers.
I hope your question is pun related.
I have a comment and a question.
That's
equipment.
Joel, my little sister is 10 and she watches MST3K every day, so some kids aren't quite idiots.
You're talking about his children. Those are his kids that sprang from his loins. Joel, I'm so sorry.
It's okay, come forward. She pleases me, this one.
And Guillermo, I was at the Peter Davison spotlight earlier, and he was talking about how one director made him catch bull semen in a cup. And so I was wondering if you're the director that likes to mess with their actors.
And I try not to, but when it's needed, I do.
With like bull semen or just
no,
general?
Bull semen, no. But in Pacific Rim,
yes.
Bourbon semen, no. We did in Pacific Rim, there's... Look at you, I can't say it. We did with Idris Elba, there's a scene where they are in the middle of a combat and they were in a real rig, huge, several stories high, that shook, and it was very uncomfortable, and I knew that they were really suffering, and Idris said, the next scene is with water and smoke and sparks and steam, so it's going to be really unpleasant, and he said, really, how much water? I said, very little, mostly in the foreground, the rest will be the stunt guys, and then we opened 9 valves of water. And he got soaked, and I knew he was locked into the set. He couldn't move. I said, sorry.
Now act.
Sorry.
You feel like a question? Oh, God, your hand, your arm. Never mind.
Stop touching.
Thank you for your question and comment.
Anyone else want to get molested by Chris? More hands went down.
On that business. Yeah, that's how I do it.
Chloe must love it.
It's a, hey, what's going on?
Hi.
Hey.
Okay, so
this is a comment. First, I'd like
that's
to
a constant question of comments.
This is my seventh show, so I'm kind of a.
Your seventh show? Never I show don't even think Jonah's been to seven.
Yeah. That's probably more than I can handle.
Okay, so first of all, I'd like to say congratulations on your ninth year of sobriety.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I proved I can do it. Get fucked up tonight!
If you could have a question, first of all, to look 9 years in the future to see what this has become, would you still have done it?
Well, first of all, I'd probably see if there are a way to prevent major tragedies.
But after you realize that's not possible.
If I had a crystal ball, would I have still done what?
All of this. See what all of this has become.
Would I still want to do it?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah! What are you kidding? Of course! I mean, this is the...
Everything's happening.
Yeah. He likes this. Guys, I wouldn't change a thing about you!
Hooray!
This has been the most amazing, like...
What about this, dude?
Yeah! Yeah! Joel has literal crystal balls.
It's a not too distant boner.
That's a crystal ball. Not too distant boner, which you can't fake. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just... To answer you somewhat sincerely and kind of gooey, it's been an amazing experience. Like, I genuinely don't have to work on anything I don't want to. And so when I hear Guillermo say, like, it's so much fun to say no when you don't want to do something, because for so much of your career early on, you constantly have to be like, all right, I guess I kind of got to do it, you know? And now, not having to do that, but then still getting the rewards of, like...
You put away the knee pads.
Yeah.
No more Pacific Rim jobs.
He's referring to truck stop boy.
You hang up
early
the knee pads.
80s.
I'm having the knee pads, Franz. But yeah, I mean, to get to have people like Joel and Guillermo, or
Jonah and Matt.
Travis. Travis, don't forget Travis.
I was. Who said that?
I wore my special.
Who said that?
Hello.
I was getting there, Travis. But your derby made you blend in with the Duba team of the.
Did you say poutine?
No. Anyway, yeah, it's been an amazing experience, and I wouldn't change anything. I mean, it'd be crazy to try
Bravo!
I'd
change a couple things. Stock options.
$1!
Yeah!
You, sir. Yes.
I nice plum tree shirt, man.
Yeah, I'm Scott Pilgrim for Comic-Con. It's my costume. Yeah. All right, I actually met you yesterday.
I remember.
Yeah, and...
I really do remember. I met you at the escalator right outside the con.
Yeah, and I felt like really... I was really sad at myself. I was like, oh, I forgot to ask for a picture. But that's either here or there.
No, that's here.
And there.
All right, I do have equipment. I mentioned to him, yes, I just want to share with everyone else that the first thing, I didn't realize until years later, the first thing I ever saw of Chris was when he guest starred on Boy Meets World.
Well, thank you for your time. It's really nice to have you.
What was Topanga like?
Top heavy. That any kid didn't watch me like, what girl has tits that big at that age? Like,
I think that shaped me in a way we all know is true, man.
What shape would that be, man?
Yes.
Right, and my question is, I'm a third year film major, so it's about that time I'm looking for like internships. So I was just wondering.
Wow.
I know. Good luck with that.
If I couldn't read your shirt, I would think you were dressed as Hulk Hogan post sex.
More Bruce Banner Hogan. I know that was a good joke, and I really deserve a lot more. Are you kidding me? A skinny, nerdy white guy, Bruce Banner Hogan. Do you see how fucking well?
Explain it more. Explain it more.
Bruce Banner was the human form of the Hulk.
Joel, what was it like when you had to explain jokes at History Science Theater?
The Hulk was like an anthropomorphic boner. Just a weird...
He was with purple pants.
I'm a dinosaur. I'm a dinosaur. And sometimes I roar. I'm a dinosaur. Look out, Jeff Goldblum.
That's our new musical. Our new musical is called Jurassic Park Avenue, and we're playing uptown. I'm sorry, you want an internship?
Yeah. No.
I'm gonna learn what I learned from. I'm gonna tell you what I learned from Guillermo. No.
Pass on your knee pads, please.
Next generation.
New York City.
Kid, let me tell you a little story about shipmates. So, anyway.
No, my question was, what were all yours, first job in the entertainment industry? Like, what was that, like, that lowest position?
Well, it was this for Matt.
I think comedy and everything else was...
All right.
That was a good show. That was Todd Glass and Jimmy Dore.
Yeah.
That was before The Nerdist.
Yep.
I've been doing podcasts long before you, buddy.
Oh, shit.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
That's okay. Jonah?
I was a writer's assistant on the show, the Andy Milonakis show on MTV. And I didn't know how to use Excel or a computer for the most part. Or I didn't know you could have the printer put the pages in order.
Because in Hawaii, they
so were not like coming out tomorrow. I just never had to. I didn't go to college, fancy pants. So I would print each and every page of the script out and then put them all together by hand and staple them. And then I didn't know what to do if the staple wouldn't go through. And then I got fired. But then they rehired me as a writer. So that was nice.
It all worked out for Jim.
What about you, Cameron? What was your very first?
I dug a grave in a movie.
I did that in real life.
Real. It was a real cemetery. It was a Mexican movie. I think it was illegal. So I did it, and in the same movie, I was PA, and I also was a stunt driver. It was a very bad action.
What about you, Travis?
Jesus Christ. This is going to sound... Okay.
I wrote the $150 million movie, no, Pacific Rim.
I sold my first screenplay out of film school, and Guillermo...
Fuck you!
So much more sense!
The lowest fucking experience!
I can't complain. I know that sucks, but yeah, it's been anytime like I go back to the film school where I graduated, they always ask me advice like, how do I break into the industry? How do I break into the industry? I'm like, I don't even fucking know how I broke into the industry.
Just sell a script right before you leave. Make a hit song.
Write something and then you sell it for money. I don't understand what you dummies want.
How do I get rich? Get $1 billion.
Have someone give me.
Now I'm going hat shopping. See ya.
Going to Justin Timberlake's
there's
store.
Nothing wrong with that, but do you ever feel like a weird, do you ever feel like artist guilt or something? Like,
oh yeah, yes, yeah. Like, well, I think when it comes out of nowhere, like, you have this looming, unstated suspicion that it could just go away out of nowhere, too. Like
when you sell Chris Hardwick an iPod case in 2007?
That takes me back, man.
I work at Apple Store.
Jeff Goobloom.
That's the porn guy. He's a Pacific Rim job.
Goobloom.
But no, I feel like I had to have like a few jobs before I felt like, you know, like, no, it wasn't a fluke and I can do this and I can keep doing it. So, cool. But yeah, at the beginning it was like, who's going to take my pass away? Like, you know, and you're always looking over your shoulder.
What about you, Joel?
I just was a stand-up. I mean, I didn't really do anything in show business.
That is the lowest of low.
All right. What?
You didn't pay enough to ask.
I'm pretty sure that all these things cost exactly.
Once you have more money, you can talk, you piece of shit.
You have changed since 10 minutes ago.
He's not changed at all. He's always been that guy. Oh, my voice sounds weird.
It's so weird hearing you and not seeing you.
I'm inside your head, Matt Myra.
Is this what it's like to listen to the podcast? It's gross.
Oh, Batman, I see.
Oh, no, it's Babe.
Oh, Batman, I think it's time you and I went to the park.
For what, Babe?
I love the Haunted Mansion ride. Is this room actually stretching?
At first I thought we weren't going to get along, but now...
I have a bad rap because I have a face thing.
Hi, what's your equipment?
The seats aren't cheap enough, move back.
I was wondering if we could ever expect to see Hellboy 3.
Ooh.
No, I want to say yes, hopefully someday somebody will come along with the will to give us...
Sorry. Just watch season 3 of Sons of Anarchy. It's not officially
or Frankie Goes Boom. No, I think we're trying the two.
Those people are very sad up there with the phone.
With the iPhone.
Very last row. Head out there, Chris. Go.
So maybe we're trying.
Giving out free high fives, but not free because you paid. They're coming to the show. $30 high five with convenience fees. How convenient is it to click a fucking button on a computer? Okay. They fuck you at the drive-thru.
I was just referencing Lethal Weapon 2.
I see TARDIS like NASA. I have it too.
No one else can see shit, Chris.
Well, you got it because of me. What?
I see it.
How far are you? Holy fuck, we sold a lot of tickets.
Was there a dude having his own wave back there?
I went to UCLA.
Someone's gonna get another jaguar.
You did. I went to UCLA. Jesus Christ, I can't fucking handle it. Oh my god, I just shit came.
Oh my god, if that's a real thing, shit coming, I'm in.
Hey, I got a question for Jonah Ray.
What's up, girl?
Yeah, what's up?
Oh, is that pussy talking, Jonah?
Damn. What you want now? Hey,
so, like, I love your Bing commercial.
What?
You know what you're talking about.
I got really excited when I was watching Hulu, and I was like, oh my god, I know that voice. It's Jonah Ray.
That's not me, that's some guy that shaved his face.
Is that... You're a big man. Is that you at the end that goes...
Because
it sounds like you. This is like hard getting questions.
You went nuts to ask a question.
I'm off my back here.
It's like you're like really close, though.
Yeah. What's your name?
Quincy.
And what's your Twitter handle?
Quincy Trujillo
MD.
Twitchy Trujillo shit. Why?
That's too many. I never.
It's Quincy Trujillo. It's don't make me. I just.
Okay, good. I just want people to tweet at you now.
So you're on Twitter to get no followers.
I'm sorry, Jonah didn't answer your question.
What? Can you answer it?
Yeah, it's him. I don't know. Fuck it. Jonah still refuses to publicly acknowledge anything about anything.
That's not me, man.
It's me and a Jonah suit.
I'm so out.
We have to ramp up the show in a sec. I know. I love you too. When's Talking Dead? Tomorrow? No, Sunday night. I fucking forgot what day it was. Jesus Christ.
When are you flying back to Los Angeles?
I'm moderating the Walking Dead panel tomorrow, and I'm getting on a plane and going back to L.A. to do Talking Dead on
what
Sunday.
What a
wedding! Fucking awesome. Hey, high five! High five! Oh, my hand!
Wow, that looks like fun!
$30 high five! I think we just have time for one more Quemet. Is there, do we have time for one more Quemet? Is it, what about this guy?
how's it going? First of all, Chris and Jonah, it was awesome seeing you at Course of the Force over the summer.
Thank you.
I was busy, all right?
Yeah.
You don't care about children.
What are you guys going to be doing tomorrow during Comic-Con? What are you excited to see? What are you excited to visit?
Is that question not for me? Because you only cited it.
I feel like... I'm running around the con all day tomorrow, moderating panels and stuff, so I won't, that'll be...
I'm going to every Chris Hardwick panel.
I feel like we have time for one more comment. Is there a really good one?
Is there...
Chrysanthemum. What?
Chris.
It's your birthday.
It's your birthday. Chris doesn't give a shit.
Happy Vagina Escape Day.
You got a 1 in 30 chance of someone else in this room having a birthday too.
That guy right in the front row. Math works, you guys. Fuck. You look great!
You're delivering babies to whom?
Babies! Get your fucking babies!
Joe, you ordered the baby!
Yes. I have a three-part question for you.
No.
It's very simple.
It's his birthday.
And we just got engaged, so...
Gross.
What?
Fucking gross.
Alright, law prima nocta!
Do you ever plan to expand Nerdist Industries to the East Coast? Do you need anyone to run it part-time? And yes, I will run it for you part-time.
You just covered everything I would have needed to know. I don't know if we'll expand.
If we had offices maybe on Martha's Vineyard where I could look out for sharks all the time.
Chris.
What?
Monica wants...
Oh, Monica.
Hey, Mon. Hi. What?
That's Monica Moon. That's Chris's assistant.
She's That's Monica great. Moon, you guys.
She cleans his jaguar.
She cleans his jaguar.
Where? I feel like that's something I would have said, but I didn't. Guys, I'm having a moment. It's a sensual moment. I don't know what's happening. She's got a vest. Chris doesn't. That's my story. Oh, I do. You're right.
What's her name?
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, my name's Eric.
Hey. Hey, Eric.
I have equipment. First off, if you haven't noticed, we have a Portal Doctor Who t-shirt that's matching.
So I get it. They take two things I love and they get my money.
Yeah. Okay, so first off, the comment. I want to thank you very much, Chris, for putting all your time and effort into making us fans, just helping us out. And it's
some of his time and effort?
Yes. Yes, all of his time and effort, because I know you're extremely busy. And so... When I reached out to you and you got back to me, I just want to say thank you.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Leading into my next question, I have a question actually for my girlfriend.
Oh, shit! Oh, fucking shit!
Will you make me the happiest nerd in all the Geek Girls? Why am I Southern Belle?
Much rather, instead of going to a beautiful park and underneath the stars, you would much rather come here and share this moment with these beautiful people. Beautiful fans here. So, I love you so much, and you make me the happiest person in the world, and you're the funniest, smartest girl I know. So, please, can we spend the rest of our lives together, and you know, we're just some people in the center of Ohio, and we're here in New York, off of Broadway, and Chris is blessing you, so...
I'm not sold yet.
Keep going.
The greatest thing that ever happened to me, so, please, Lindsay, will you marry me?
Yes! Yes! Oh! That would have been so bad.
She's my birthday girl!
Right at the end of that speech, before you asked the question,
a little late on the stroke, bro.
You could have fucked every girl in here.
Except when you said we're off Broadway.
That would have been insulting.
How are you feeling?
I
I'm in shock.
You okay? You want to throw up?
A little.
Oh my gosh.
I want you to know that he blocked you on Twitter to make this happen.
He blocked
me. Engagement's off.
Because he tweeted at me and said, hey, I want to do the proposal. And he had blocked you because someone else is like, hey, your girlfriend probably follows you, dickhead. And he was like, I blocked her. And we were like, what? How long have you guys been together?
Years.
2 months.
How many?
4 years. And now it's time. Where? So you guys live in Ohio? And you came out here for your Comic Con? It's a very special... People really win on MTV! Oh, wait. That's not what I meant to say. Congratulations, you guys. People should send you congratulations on Twitter. What is your Twitter?
Mine's Eric with a C, J, Bell.
And you are?
Linds Hughes.
LINDSHUGHES. Fucking, I'm awesome.
he says that after everyone.
Congratulations, you guys. Come in for... recently engaged, motherfucker! Guess who's gonna run East Coast Nerds?
Get out! Burn, bitch!
There's no way to follow that up after a proposal, so, you know, the worst part of it was... Okay, I'm gonna give you a little behind-the-curtain peek. I realized the cue line was gonna be, okay, we have one more equipment, and I turn and I'm like, I don't know which guy it is.
Yeah. So I realized it might be him, but we're like, it's gonna be him!
Because you said you just got engaged. I was like, oh, I thought he was gonna do it. In front of everyone, not just go, hey, we got engaged.
You should have thought of that.
Chris, if you had been at soundcheck, you would have known they were sitting there.
This is why the hat's good. You can always be like, hey, I'm the guy with the hat.
Yes, exactly! Fuck you guys!
And now when I walk in the room, people know, hey, he's the guy with the hat on.
Hey, you think that guy's hat's real big?
Well, this has been an incredible night, you guys. We're gonna come out and sign stuff afterwards, and I think Joel's coming out. Are you gonna come out? Jonah has some awesome t-shirts out there as well that are new.
Jonah Radio merchandise, guys.
Yeah.
Jonah Radio.
So,
Jonah Radio.
Next week.
So we're gonna come out. I think we're gonna do the signing in the lobby. I'm sorry if they move everyone along quickly. It's just. We just want to make sure people aren't here for 4 hours because we have to. The venue has to close at a certain time, so we'll get through everyone. But if they move you along, please don't be angry at us. But thank you so much for coming out to the Nerdist Podcast Live. It's amazing to see you. Please help me thank my guests, Joel Hawks and Travis Beecham.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.